local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
A group of juveniles allegedly responsible for over a dozen vehicle-related crimes are in jail after a deadly police chase. Michigan News Network's Charlie Langton reports.
Warren police wanted to pull over a Dodge with five juveniles wearing ski masks when they took off southbound on Shaner, and then the suspect vehicle crashed into a vehicle driven by a 48-year-old man from Detroit. He was pronounced dead at the hospital. Warren police captured four during a foot chase, and again, one remains on the run. Police believe the five juveniles are responsible for at least 15 car thefts in Warren and East Point within the last 48 hours.
Charlie Langton, Michigan News Network.
A Macomb County man is facing a federal weapons charge after the FBI uncovered violent threats online and a disturbing connection to the Oxford High School shooter. Investigators say they started looking into Aliyah Zarelli Maycock back in May. They received tips about an account registered to him leaving threatening comments on YouTube, including one claiming he would be the next Breton Tarrant, the man who killed 51 people during the 2019 mosque attacks in Christchurch. When authorities examined a .22 caliber rifle owned by Maycock, they found the serial number had been removed or altered. The gun also had the phrase, "There is no God," written on it, which is the exact same quote written by Ethan Crumley the day before the Oxford tragedy. Around 6 a.m. Wednesday morning, Jackson County Sheriff's deputies responded to Callahan Road in Parma Township for a breaking and entering report. Several keys, a drone, an iPad, and a Chevrolet pickup truck were among the items stolen. The pickup truck was located on Division Drive in Calhoun County. Deputies responded for evidence processing. That investigation is ongoing. Also from Wednesday, Jackson police located a stolen vehicle abandoned on North Street near the walking trail. That vehicle was impounded to be processed for fingerprints. Later the same day, Jackson police officers responded to the 900 block of Chidock Avenue for a suspicious vehicle. That vehicle had been reported stolen. It was processed for fingerprints and returned to the registered owner. Federal and local agencies teamed up to find the suspect in a Sterling Heights bank robbery. The suspect received an undisclosed amount of money from a local bank on Monday afternoon. They reportedly passed the teller a note. No weapons were used during the incident. Investigators learned the car used in the robbery was stolen from Troy the day before. The FBI, Macomb County Sheriff's Office, and Troy Police Department assisted with the investigation. A woman from out of state was arrested. The investigation is ongoing, and the suspect's identity won't be released until charges are filed and they are arraigned. A Houston man is facing 13 felony counts in connection to a fatal shooting at a Shelby Township car dealership late last year. Marvin Batu and Gaith Baban were fatally shot at Star Auto Sales on November 7th. 47-year-old Terrence Sandals was bound over on two counts each of first-degree premeditated murder and armed robbery, along with a litany of weapons charges. It's alleged that there was a dispute between Sandals and the dealership over a car he previously bought. A person riding an e-bike was killed in Ferndale after being hit by a Road Commission for Oakland County work truck. The crash happened just before 1 o'clock Thursday afternoon on Woodward near 9 Mile. The person riding the e-bike has been identified as a 33-year-old from Ferndale. The Oakland County Sheriff's Office is assisting the Ferndale Police Department with the investigation. Crews responded to a fire in the lot of a car auction business in Woodhaven. Woodhaven fire officials said the flames broke out at Copart in the area of I-75 and Van Horn around 1 Thursday morning. Here's Woodhaven Fire Chief Brad Miles.
Several different cars. Initially, it was really two cars that ended up spreading to three cars. There was a couple other cars that were damaged by the heat and whatnot because there's several cars. They're stacked.
Miles said no one was injured and the building fared well. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. Extreme Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram will be hosting their first ever Extreme Summer Car Show Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Noah Shackelford with Extreme talked about what attendees can expect at the event and how those interested in bringing a car can register.
At Extreme Dodge, it's our very first Extreme Summer Car Show. We did plan ahead. We're going to have All-American Smash Wagon food truck. They got smash burgers, hot dogs, fries, loaded fries. And then, of course, it's a car show, so we invite people to bring cars. If you are bringing a car, we got a Facebook event page where you can find the form and then register your car as well. We're going to do prize giveaways. I'm going to have a free oil change, shirts. we're really excited, and already we have a 1954 Cadillac. We got some 60s Dodges, some 70s Dodges.
There will be multiple prizes awarded throughout the day with opportunities for everyone that's there to come away with a prize.
So we're opening up the prizes to pretty much anyone who comes. Okay. The contestants who come, they can participate. The people who are coming just to look at the cars, they can participate. We really, I mean, like the Jeep event we did earlier this spring, we're just trying to give back to the community. It's our 30-year anniversary. And, you know, this community has been so amazing to us. So we're really just trying to give people a fun opportunity to, you know, hang around with each other and talk with us and, you know, just have a lot of fun on a Saturday during Father's Day weekend.
With Extreme celebrating their 30th anniversary in Jackson, Noah said that their commitment to having a local feel is a major part of keeping them in the community.
We're a local business, so we really give people that local feel that, hey, like, you know, when you call us, you're not just gonna talk with a AI, or you're not just gonna talk with a fake person from a service center hotline, you know. So, you know, we're giving you that real feel. And, you know, by not having a sales or finance manager, you only work with the one salesperson. So you go into their office, you're sitting there until you walk out with the keys. And if you come in with all your stuff pre-approved, we can get you in and out super quick. So, you know, those are kind of some of the things that have really gotten us to be around for this long and really supporting our community.
Extreme Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram, located at 2300 Seymour Road in Jackson. Ballet Chelsea and the Jackson Symphony Orchestra will celebrate nearly a decade of artistic collaboration with a production of The Nutcracker, combining live dance and live symphonic music. Since first partnering in 2017, the two organizations have brought together dancers and musicians for performances that aim to showcase the power of the performing arts. This year's production will feature Ballet Chelsea dancers performing to Tchaikovsky's iconic score, played live by the Jackson Symphony Orchestra, the Northwest High School Choirs, and Jackson College Vocal Point. Performances will take place December 11th through the 13th at the Potter Center on the campus of Jackson College. They'll happen that Friday at 7 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m., and 7 p.m., and once again on Sunday at 2 p.m. The JSO encourages audiences to purchase early, as the Nutcracker remains one of the region's most popular holiday traditions, and the best seats are expected to sell quickly. Tickets and additional information will be available beginning July 1st on the Ballet Chelsea and Jackson Symphony Orchestra websites. Jackson County officials have given their approval of a proposed Grow Jackson mural to be painted on the north end of the Armory property building. The county recently entered into a lease agreement with Grow Jackson to operate a farmer's market slash farm stop at the Armory property on North Street. The farmer's market opened in May and operations are underway. Grow Jackson has proposed to have a mural painted on the north side of the building. There are no costs to the county, as Grow Jackson will cover all associated costs of $5,000 for the work. The work will be completed by Zach Snyder, a local Jackson-based muralist. Zach's notable work includes the parrot at the Spring Arbor Road Polly's Country Market. The mural will feature a variety of locally grown Michigan-based products and the River and Rail Food Hub logo. The mural will be completed with paint and take up a majority of the wall. Grow Jackson intends to work with Zach Snyder on other murals on the building. The Jackson County Board of Commissioners gave their approval of the mural on June 16th. Ahead of hot summer weather, one company is recalling its bladeless fans. Michigan News Network's Kyle Kimball reports.
Mercury Innovations has recalled around 18,000 hot and cool heating and cooling fans due to an overheating issue that can lead to a risk of fire, serious injury, and even death, according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They were sold at TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Sierra stores nationwide from October 2024 through October 2025 for about $30. Mercury Innovations says two fans have reportedly caught fire when connected to a power source. No injuries have been reported. Consumers should stop using the product immediately and contact Mercury, that's M-E-R-K-U-R-Y, Innovations for a full refund.
Kyle Kimball, the Michigan News Network.
A feud is brewing in the Michigan House as a Republican lawmaker faces demands to be kicked out of his own caucus. The Detroit News obtained audio recordings of Representative Jim DeSana taking aim at fellow Republican Jamie Thompson. In the tape, DeSana claims Thompson has a, quote, victim mentality, specifically pointing to her public grieving over the 2021 death of her 24-year-old daughter. House Speaker Matt Hall was pressed on the issue.
I'm grateful for both of them, we'll work through it as a caucus, and we'll get to a place where we're working in harmony as a team. That's what we've got to do. We've done it all the 2 years. and we're going to continue to do what we've got to do to work toward it, because the people elected us to do a lot of things.
Hall gave no indication if DeSana will be punished for the remarks. Thompson, however, says she refuses to return to Lansing and will work strictly from her Downriver district until DeSana loses his committee assignments. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel is taking a victory lap today over the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's decision to abandon its plans to open an ICE detention center in the city of Romulus. Nessel saying DHS has now reversed course and will sell the abandoned warehouse it purchased for $34 million after having been sued by her office.
We filed our lawsuit in March because we knew this project violated the law. Rather than face the court at a preliminary injunction hearing, DHS and ICE blinked. They tried to buy time, but they ran out of options. This is what happens when a resilient community refuses to be pushed around by the whims of the Trump administration.
A DHS spokesperson says the agency is moving to utilize existing county and state partner detention spaces instead of the Romulus project, such as the North Lake Correctional Facility in Baldwin or county jails. Michigan U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin announced legislation aimed at curbing the president's ability to send uniformed troops into polling places. If passed, the Protect Our Polls Act would require congressional approval in order for him to do so.
There is only one legal way to send uniformed military to the polls on our books, and that is to, quote, repel armed enemies of the United States. We have never done this in our history, not during World War II when we were in the middle of combat operations, not just months after 9/11 when we had been attacked on our own soil.
Senator Slotkin said this bill also protects our service members from having to follow illegal orders. She said it ultimately comes down to Congress trying to bar the president from stealing an election. Changing the pace of learning in Michigan.
Lawmakers want to bridge the gap between the current model of learning and actual skills. The House approving a plan that would rethink the mandated 1,098 instructional hours behind a desk over 180 days, saying that students should be able to learn in different ways. Republican State Representative Ann Boland says their plan would open up K through 12 schools to include experiences in those hours, like work-based programs and internships as part of the mandated instructional time.
Look, traditional school works for a lot of students. But we have a very strong learning gap. We know it's very high in the state of Michigan. We don't have time to wait, and this is an opportunity to propel forward another opportunity for students and parents.
And the pair of bills in the House passed 107-0. Boland hopes the Senate moves forward, gets a governor's signature, so schools can consider these options when planning for the school year. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
The workforce against AI movement continues within Detroit's Big Three. General Motors is installing dozens of new cobots inside Factory Zero on the Detroit-Hamtramck border, and the decision to do so has sparked anger from the UAW. Cobots are collaborative robots that work alongside robots in the factory. This comes as more than 1,000 workers have been laid off from Factory Zero. The UAW says this is just another example of a loss of manpower. GM says the cobots are necessary to stay competitive in the industry. An arborist died on the job this week in southwest Michigan. The 52-year-old was sitting on a log in Edwardsburg when a branch from an adjacent tree fell and struck them on the head, killing them. This is the 17th workplace fatal reported in the state this year. A 38-year-old man has been charged with assault with intent to murder in a road rage incident in Grand Rapids on Wednesday. Nicholas Hofstra has been charged after allegedly firing shots at a car on East Beltline Avenue, then assaulting the same victim. The victim has a wound to their chin. Hofstra was also charged with weapons charges. More than 10 people were rescued from the Detroit River thanks to the fire department and police department. First responders are sharing how to be safe on the water.
Detroit firefighters and police say last Wednesday, 20 people were taking a boating class near the Belle Isle Bridge when 7 sailboats capsized. At least 12 people had to be rescued. First responders say this was caused by the high winds and storms that day. Daniel Familant, who's a fireboat operator, helped assist in this rescue.
Well, number one is wear a life jacket for sure. You know, it's the new time boaters that had never been on the water before, these younger generations coming up, and they're having fun, but they've got to, you know, realize that it's dangerous out here and the weather can kick up at any time.
Another issue seen by first responders during the summertime are jet skiers who partake in the sport for the first time. They suggest always checking the weather before going out on the water. Daryl and Horn
for the Michigan News Network.
Police in Grand Rapids are praising the work of two canines. It's been a couple busy months. On social media, they say canine Digo continues to heal from a stab wound and appears ready to get back to work. Before the incident, Digo assisted to locate a half a kilo of fentanyl. Meanwhile, canine Rip found a kilo of cocaine and a kilo of fentanyl. They're saying the work of these canines helped to reduce the risk of overdoses in the city of Grand Rapids and West Michigan. On this day in history, freedom finally arrived for the enslaved residents of Texas. Quote, the people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free, end quote. So began General Order No. 3, a decree delivered by Major General Gordon Granger on this day in 1865 to the residents of Galveston, Texas. The order informed both enslavers and the enslaved alike that the Emancipation Proclamation freed the enslaved peoples living in Confederate territories. Commemorating this historic day and the end of slavery in the United States, the first Juneteenth, in combination of the words June and 19th, celebrations began in Texas in 1866 and spread widely as black Texans moved about the country. Juneteenth, National Independence Day, became a federal holiday in 2021. This day in 1846, Alexander Joy Cartwright arranged a baseball game between the New York Knickerbockers and the New York Nine at Hoboken, New Jersey, the first baseball game to use the set of rules on which today's game is based. This day in 1910, the first Father's Day was celebrated in Spokane, Washington. This day in 1944, during World War II, the Japanese Combined Fleet and the U.S. Fifth Fleet engaged in a major air and sea battle, the Battle of the Philippine Sea, which ended the next day with a U.S. victory. June 19th, birthdays, baseball legend and Hall of Famer Lou Gehrig, who passed away back in 1941. British politician Boris Johnson, 62 years old today. Actress Zoe Saldana is 48. Rapper Macklemore, 43 years old today. Singer Paula Abdul is 64. Actress Robin Tunney is 54. Cosby Show mom Felicia Rashad is 78 years old. Actress Kathleen Turner is 72. Ferris Bueller actress Mia Sara is 59 years old today. NBA Hall of Famer Dirk Nowitzki is 48. And legendary rock vocalist Ann Wilson is 76. This day in music history, back in 1964, Martha and the Vandellas recorded one of Motown's signature songs, Dancing in the Street, at Hitsville, USA in Detroit, Michigan. Written by Marvin Gaye, William Mickey Stevenson, and Ivy Joe Hunter, the song reached number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart and number 4 in the UK. Many artists have covered the song, including the Mamas and the Papas, David Bowie and Mick Jagger, the Kinks, the Grateful Dead, and Little Richard. In 1971, Carole King started a 5-week run at number 1 on the U.S. singles chart with It's Too Late / I Feel the Earth Move. Both songs were from her million-selling Tapestry album. 1973, Edgar Winter's U.S. number 1 hit Frankenstein was awarded a gold record. Winter named the song because of how many cuts and patches were contained in the original studio tape. In 2006, Taylor Swift released her debut single Tim McGraw as the lead single from her self-titled debut album. The track peaked at number 40 on the Billboard Hot 100. June 19, 2012, the former chief financial officer for Pearl Jam was charged with 33 counts of theft for allegedly stealing at least $380,000 from the Seattle band's management company. According to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, Ricky Goodrich allegedly stole hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of several years, spending the money on lavish family vacations, spa treatments, life insurance, and pricey California wines. And back in 1965, the Four Tops went to number 1 on the U.S. singles chart with I Can't Help Myself. Lead singer Levi Stubbs had not been satisfied with the recording session and was promised that he could do it again the following day, but no other session ever took place. The track that became a hit was just the second take of the song. Ooh, sugar pie, honey, you know that I love you. more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. Reporting, I'm Steve Boyle. Joining us via the telephone this morning, State Representative Kathy Schmaltz. Good morning, Kathy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
You know, I'm all right. I feel like I got to bed at a good time a little early last night, so bright and early for Mark's show. I feel energized.
Oh, good. Good for you. That'll be great. I heard you yesterday at the barbecue.
Yeah, well, I was speculating this morning that you must have arrived after I left, because you for sure were there, right?
Well, no, I sent actually a tribute, but I had to be in Lansing because we're still voting on the budget and different things. But no, I sent a tribute over to give to Phil. 25 years. It's just amazing. That you know, it started just at his firm and then moved all these years and finally became a fundraiser for all the nonprofits, and just a wonderful celebration.
Yeah, it really is. It was the most fun talking to Phil, actually talking about what it meant to him to be able to hold that event and raise that much money, over $250,000 that they've raised for the charities that they support through that event.
Yeah, Phil does not only that, but just a lot in the community. Mm-hmm. I talked to him later at an event at Jackson School of the Arts. He does so much. We sent a tribute over. But you know what I didn't do was send my staff to get food to bring to Lansing. That's what I didn't do.
That's where you came up short and made a mistake, because the food was tremendous, of course. I had a great time there. And I did see your guy there, actually. That must have been that guy walking around with the folder and getting pictures.
Oh, yeah. And then, Phil really liked the tribute we gave him, and he deserves it, you know, recognition. So we gave him a state tribute just to thank him for all the years that he did the barbecue. 25 is a long time.
No doubt about it. And he did, I know he said, at one point he said, I want to make sure people know that it's not a health reason or anything like that. He said, I feel great. We just feel the event's run its course, because that he said, you know, people are going to start speculating that maybe he's getting out of it because he can't handle it anymore. But he said, that's not why.
Oh, no. If you know Phil Willis, he can handle it. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Pat and Phil do a wonderful job in the community with just different things. And, they're still raring to go to help.
No doubt about it. Well, you're raring to go to help out, too, apparently. Very busy with some of your plans in the House. A plan to help students with dyslexia was approved by the House this week and passed with bipartisan support. What's that going to entail?
Yes, I had two bills voted on this week and are now in the Senate. And I told you about both of them before. So this dyslexia bill would make sure a teacher in each school district is trained in the Orton-Gillingham method to teach dyslexic students. It would be 30 hours the first year, 10 hours updated each year. Orton-Gillingham is a multisensory method, hearing, seeing, movement, like tracing letters on sand trays. When a dyslexic person looks at a word, they don't see what most of us see. They process differently, so they need to learn differently. I've been working on this legislation for a couple of years. We've had laws to recognize students with dyslexia, but we never gave teachers training to actually teach someone who is dyslexic. I was on the Michigan Dyslexia Institute board for a long time. I've had several teachers come to me and say, how do I teach this child? They have dyslexia. This is so important. It's an important policy. And with 15 to 20% of our population dyslexic, 1 in 5 people, parents, teachers, and our dyslexic kids won't have to search for answers. This will make such a difference in so many lives. I'm so happy that we finally got this through with bipartisan support. It's about time. You know, this Orton-Gillingham method was actually invented in the 1930s. And the fact that we are not helping our teachers know how to teach our dyslexic kids is just unbelievable to me. So I'm so happy about this. So many teachers, students, and parents have been struggling for so long to get help, and this will really make a difference.
Yeah, I feel like those kind of things have been a focus for you a lot. And when we have these conversations, that you're looking for ways that education can be improved through a number of different ways.
Yes, we have a lot of different things going on, the science of reading, getting back to basic, you know, just phonics, letters, sounds. As we talked about before, you know, we are 41st in the nation in mm-hmm. reading with our kids, and how that ever happened is, you know, it's a travesty. I mean, we're failing our kids by doing this and not taking care of our education problem. And so we passed a lot of bills this week about education, how to change things, and just make sure that teachers, you know, they're asking us to help them. Mm-hmm. And obviously parents don't know what to do because their kids aren't reading. We need to help our kids, and that's a big focus.
Well, and a lot of times we hear addressing education issues simply as a higher dollar amount investment, but you know, spending additional money on something that isn't working doesn't make sense to me. So right. Going through and reviewing those programs and seeing how you can improve the learning for the teacher so that they can improve the learning for the students all makes sense.
I mean, it's really frustrating for them. We want to make sure our schools are fully funded, mm-hmm. but you can't, like you said, keep throwing money at a problem and expect it to change without changing the system. So this is very important to us. And we also have an innovation education program that we passed out of the House, too. This has been a priority, too. What we want to do, you know, every child learns differently in school. So we want to be able to have students learn differently and be taught differently and give our schools a little bit of flexibility. That's so important. So this innovation project, we want kids to succeed not only in school but also on a career path. We talk about that all the time. So this would allow schools flexibility to create innovative programs, hands-on projects, job training, real-world experience, career and technical education, at the workplace, internships, apprenticeships. Right now, everything is really built on time in the classroom instead of what kids are learning. So under this innovation plan that we also passed, schools can offer more personalized real-world learning experience. We have an outdated system where we need seats in the classroom, a requirement of 1,098 instructional hours over 180 days. It makes it difficult for schools to offer more innovative programs. So this is really kind of exciting. And again, it's detailed plans. They have to track each student's progress, report results regularly, show students are meeting academic standards. It's so exciting for schools to try this. The Michigan Department of Education, Michigan Education Association, teachers, parents, students, everybody is really excited to try some new ways, innovative programs to help our kids in the classroom and outside the classroom and get them on a career path. So we're looking at so many different areas to improve our education system, and it's exciting.
Yeah, I gotta believe teachers are really excited about something like that, because I'm sure they're in the classroom with these individual students and knowing that there is something they could do that would help them learn better, but it's just not within their guidelines, I suppose.
That's right. And again, the Department of Education has to approve it, and then parents have to opt in on it and let their students do it too, so they have the final say.
Yeah, it all sounds good to me, Kathy. What else are you up to? I know we talked about this, I think, the last time you and I spoke was giving Michigan veterans access to hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and that's moving forward?
Yes, that was also voted out of the House with bipartisan support, something I've been working on again for a very long time. It's a 3-year pilot program. 13 other states offer this to veterans. Our veterans shouldn't have to travel out of state to get this treatment, and that's what they're doing now. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy has shown to help traumatic brain injuries, post-traumatic stress disorder. One of our local veterans who testified in my committee, Families and Veterans, showed actual slides of healing of his brain tissue after going through this. It was amazing to see. So hyperbaric oxygen therapy is an infusion of oxygen. You're in a pressurized chamber, and you breathe in pure oxygen, 100% in a hard-shelled chamber. Less than that if you go into a soft shell chamber. It's been around for years for wound healing, decompression sickness, other medical conditions. Our local veterans are so happy about this. As soon as they heard that it was going to the floor, I got all these calls, and now it's in the Senate, and I hope it moves out of there quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting that's something that would have to go. You'd have to go out of state to get into. I think that's been another thing that we've talked about multiple times. Where one of the things that you've been working on has been kind of streamlining systems for cooperation with other states and you know, licensing or whatever training and things people need to kind of streamline that whole process. when it comes to these kind of treatments for whether it's veterans or even just typical kind of care.
Yeah, licensing contacts are real important since we do have a lack of access to healthcare professionals. What we're talking about in our health committee all the time is like physical therapists, not making them get a separate license when they want to work in our state from another mm-hmm. state. So this really helps people have more access to healthcare professionals, especially in areas like up north, Upper Peninsula, where we're really lacking on staffing.
Yeah, great. And yeah, as you mentioned that kind of licensing rules, streamlining licensing rules and agreements, that's another thing that you've kind of been doing in the Health Policy Committee this week, working on streamlining licensing rules for healthcare providers.
Yeah, no, that's right. I testified on a bill. This is we have a lot of what we call red tape bills. This is a 10-bill package. Most of it is just technical changes. But again, we have so many unnecessary regulations or duplication that we don't need that hampers our businesses and all of our people, actually. So currently, Michigan hospitals and crisis stabilization units must obtain a separate license in order to provide substance use disorder services or programs like that, even though they already operate under extensive state licensure requirements. These facilities are subject to oversight, inspections, staffing standards, safety requirements, a wide range of rules under their existing license. Requiring them to get a separate license is unnecessary and costly and can discourage providers from offering substance use disorder services, which we really need. So these bills will exempt hospitals from having to get that separate license to offer substance use disorder services. Really simple bill, but it just stops duplication. It does not remove accountability or oversight and does not lower standard of care. It just makes sure that we don't have to go through more paperwork to get another license that's actually not needed.
Yeah, Kathy, I mean, I have this feeling, and I guess you can confirm for me if it's a correct feeling or not, but that Jackson and this area of mid-Michigan in general is kind of taking a very active stance toward treating substance abuse disorders. Of course, everything that's happening over at Andy's Place and with Andy's Angels and of course, your representation of us and going and doing that stuff in Lansing. Like, I feel like in many ways we're leading the way in Michigan on treating substance abuse disorders.
We sure are. Of course, a lot more needs to be done. And we have great collaboration with our nonprofits, too, working mm-hmm. together, which really helps. And I'm always bringing our people from our nonprofits up and different businesses just to speak in my committee and different places. Since we do, I believe we are leading the state in so many areas. I love to highlight that and show other representatives and senators what we're doing so they can try and do it in their parts of the state. Yes, we are in the forefront. And Andy's Place has been great. Mike Hurst has done a wonderful job over there. And I'm actually talking to another rep because there's talk about putting one in his area. And
oh,
so
yeah.
we're going to have their people, I think it's Bay City area, around there. We're going to have everybody come here and go through Andy's Place and try and get one in that part of the state also.
Great. Well, and yeah, you'll have to explain to me, too, about Steve Castle going to your committee for Families and Veterans to have discussion about foster care system.
Yes, I bring it. Steve has been up a lot because he's such an advocate and he's so intelligent and just knows about so many things. Of course, he's CEO of Interfaith Shelter, but he's also a foster care parent. And we have a lot of issues to deal with in our foster care system. And so Steve came in with a former employee of Department of Health and Human Services to talk about some of the changes that we need to do in our foster care system, not just placing kids, helping our foster families, but also when our foster kids age out of the system. We're working on a big bill package to try and help. You know, issues like when a child is removed 8 to 15 times, moved in and out of homes, that should never happen. That is obviously just more traumatizing the child, and it just shouldn't happen. So we're looking at that. And it's always, you want to reunite the child with their biological parent, but if it's not working, you have to find a permanent home for the child and not just put them back with a biological parent who's not capable or willing to change their behavior so they can actually care for them. We need to help our foster families more with realistic expectations, crucial information. We're working with Steve, as I said, and others just to form this foster care package. We need to protect our kids and help our foster families and encourage others to foster kids. A lot has to be done in this area, but, you know, it's a first step. We have some bill and legislation written up, but we're still working on all that.
Well, everything we discussed today sounds like worthwhile endeavors and worth your time and effort there in Lansing. Budget update, what's the status there? Do you have anything to share?
Well, yes, you know, every day is a new day with that. Budget negotiations are continuing. I hear that they just became, at first they were on a slow track, now I hear they're on a fast track with the negotiations. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully next week we'll have more movement on that. Of course, the hope is to get that done quickly. We were way ahead this year compared to last year, and then sometimes negotiations stall a bit. But I hear that they're back on the fast track, so that's a good sign.
That is a good sign. Any good signs for your Detroit Tigers turning things around? Tarik Skubal out tonight.
I know. We think it's turning a corner. I tell you, they are hitting a lot better. They really are hitting a lot better. Our bullpen still needs quite a bit of work. Who do we face? The White Sox tonight.
Yep.
So we're back in the basement, 9.5 behind. We still have time. We haven't had the All-Star break yet.
That's true. We get the Cy Young Tarik Skubal pitching tonight, I believe was the report. And so his first time back with the big club for a while, that ought to be a jolt for the crew.
I think Verlander's going Sunday too. That should be interesting. To see how he's doing when he pitches. So, yeah, you know, I'm an optimist. We'll see what happens. Yeah, but they really have been hitting well. I mean, what did Cole Keith have? 3 home runs at one game. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to see them start hitting like they are, but the consistency hasn't been there. We saw that at the end of last year. Hopefully that'll change.
Well, you've been consistently a Tigers fan, so I appreciate you fielding questions. But I've got to ask you, I don't know your consistency or fandom for World Cup, but USA, big game today, 3 o'clock with Australia and Group D. Will you be tuning in, or are you just kind of casually following it?
I kind of casually follow it. I think it's exciting. I'm glad that soccer is taking off a little bit more here. I think it's fun. My dad, a long time ago at the Pontiac Silverdome, had brought in some international soccer teams. He got involved in that. I don't know. My dad had gotten involved in everything, it seems. But I remember going to a game at the Pontiac Silverdome with all these teams that he brought in, and it was great. It was so much fun. So, yes, it's wonderful to see all these people here from different countries, and everybody has a lot of excitement around it, so I like it. How about you?
I'm the same. I'll check out the outcome, and maybe if I'm able to get out of here early today, after arriving early today, I might stop by and check out, you know, maybe somewhere where my buddy always says you should watch the World Cup games in a place where a lot of other people are watching too, and it lifts up the excitement level. So I'm not just going to go home and watch. If I do, I'll go out somewhere and watch with other people.
Yes, I heard that there were some people talking about, oh, we're going to have this soccer party, and, you know, everybody's going to come in with different jerseys. And I thought, oh, that's fun. It gets people excited.
Yeah, good timing of it for today, like 3 o'clock this afternoon. So a lot of people maybe getting their Father's Day weekend started, and could be a good time for viewing that. Where are you going to be this weekend? Any big events on your schedule?
Oh, of course, it's Juneteenth, so we have a bunch of Juneteenth celebrations going on, especially downtown. Mm-hmm. That's always a wonderful big event. It's just so fun to see everybody, and so many great vendors are down there. So that's the big thing this weekend, is Juneteenth celebration, and that's right downtown. If everybody wants to stop in there.
Yeah, a lot of live music.
Excuse me?
A lot of live music performances.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so everybody will probably be down there this weekend.
All right. Well, hey, have a great weekend, Kathy, and let's go Tigers.
Yes. Good talking to you as always, and have a wonderful weekend.
All right. You do the same. State Rep Kathy Smaltz joining us in studio. The crew from Uncharted Films Incorporated. Is it incorporated? Did I get the name right, guys?
We're Uncharted Film Co. So same, but different.
All right.
Yeah.
You misread. Important words, right? Yeah, so I guess we'll have to share that microphone if you guys don't mind. But Jake and Chandler joining us here, who an Uncharted film co. Tell us about what you guys do. What's the business model?
Yeah, so we're a video production agency. We are right downtown Jackson. We produce video content for businesses to help them grow their audience, position themselves as experts, build a brand, and build trust. So we do a lot of commercial work, a lot of video for businesses' websites, for their social media, even like training and onboarding type content. But it's all based around like we do pre-production, production, and editing of the video. So that's the whole spiel.
Yeah. Well, I know I've seen your guys' location downtown, or at least seen, you know, the name is around, so it's noteworthy and memorable from the Jackson area. And so I'm sure a lot of our listeners, although I know you guys have been around before different ways here with WKHM, but yeah, I think you're a familiar brand, so I think it's nice to get people out to say, all right, what exactly do they do film-wise? And so a lot of promotional stuff, a lot of commercial stuff, as you mentioned, started almost a decade ago. So this has been a long time in building.
Yeah, it started with just me, more as a freelancer doing like a lot of like weddings and events and recitals and all this kind of stuff. And it really like shifted into more corporate, which was always the goal. But we moved to the Lean Rocket Lab in 2020, and that's when we just started, you know, getting way better connected, you know, meeting a lot of other business owners, getting, you know, training and all this stuff from the lab. And that's really when it shifted from like freelance to really feeling more like an actual business, you know, not just like one person. And that's when we started hiring and everything too.
So you say like the corporate, that's kind of always the aim, to kind of get in where you were working with companies to produce whatever it might be, promotional training materials and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've always been really interested in just like small businesses, stories, and like you know, feeling like everyone and every business has a really unique story to tell. But like early on with like the weddings and recitals and stuff, that stuff's just, it's really good work. It's really like consistent. That's a great business in itself. But yeah, our vision was always trying to get more to the commercial work.
Well, and I feel like doing what you kind of do, videography and that kind of effort, a lot of times that ends up being somebody with an artistic goal and somebody who likes to make film and see visual medium, and then realize, well, I got to work in something that I can get paid to do also. So though that always feels like the wedding industry, like you said, is a great way that if you have the skills consistently, you can work in that business and leave you open to pursue maybe the more artistic aspects of what you do. Would you say that's a thing, like you get into it with an artistic mind, at least initially?
Yeah, definitely. And you try, that's always a balance that you have to to work to keep, you know, like you want to bring as much like creativity and just like uniqueness to every project now still. But you know, there's always still like the objective, like you can't like lose track of like what the objective is just because something looks good or sounds good or is cool, you know. So that is like a constant battle, but you know, We try to do our own projects at least, you know, once or twice a year. You know, we try to keep up with like passion projects. So we made a short film last year. We finished a documentary this year, and we're working on another short film. So we can, you know, kind of scratch that itch as well.
Well, and I guess that ends up begging the question, like what first got you started on this? Was it a teacher or an experience that you got to work with someone where film became important to you?
Yeah, for me, I think it was like I grew up at a time where like just like video cameras were becoming way more accessible in like the household. So me and my friends were always running around with cameras, making silly videos and stuff. So I was always very interested in it. And then going through high school, tried to turn every project into a video project, always asking the teacher, like, instead of like presenting this, can I like turn it into a video?
Yeah.
And then Chandler and I actually went to the same college, Huntington University, which has like a great digital media arts program for like film. And I went for film and broadcast and marketing,
Yeah, then I went for film production, and I feel like for me, like, YouTube was such a like a rising thing.
Yeah.
So YouTube was such a huge influence, and also like with me, like, I come from a kind of a broken family, and so comedy movies are always such a huge thing for connection and stuff. So I always wanted to do stuff like that, and, you know, got into this, and, you know, it's been really fun. So.
All right. Well, and I guess the real item that gets you here today specifically is that it's kind of having some success in making kind of documentary film. And, yeah. And tell us about Shift. Is this what it's called? This kind of big deal for you guys. Tell us about that and what it's about and how you got into it.
Yeah. So Shift is a documentary about a Ferrari Challenge driver named Lisa Clark. She is about, I would say, late 50s, 60 years old, and she is just killing it. She drives in North America, she drives in Europe in the Ferrari Challenge series, which is kind of an amateur series, but she's going, what, like 150, 160 miles an hour on the track, so it's really impressive stuff. And so we got to follow her through a whole season, and throughout following her through the season, we kind of learned more about her story and how through a divorce and through, you know, finding her purpose in being a mom. We thought that would be a really cool story to talk about, just how she got from, you know, having this dream of racing as a kid into going into more just like business and marriage and being a mom, and then how that divorce led her back into racing or into racing. And we thought that was kind of a cool story of purpose and, you know, just doing something that you really love and are passionate about. So, yeah. And so it was a really fun and cool experience to talk about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can connect with that idea that, you know, if something, your life kind of set up a way that you do it and then the plans change, and so it becomes kind of important to chase something different or maybe a dream that you postponed or in some way, but get into it. And I'm guessing that a lot of those drivers are not in their 50s competing in that racing, if I'm mistaken, correct me, but I'm guessing it's unique.
Definitely motorsports in general, you know, that is definitely not the typical you know, age group. In this series, you do see a little bit more of it because there are people pursuing, but definitely not, you know, especially like the female aspect of it. Like motorsports, like women are very like underrepresented in motorsports. Like that was another, you know, not something we dove into a lot in the documentary, but definitely another element of it that was very like motivational, like in her case. So she was definitely a very unique case, and not someone, especially because she didn't start getting into motorsports again until, you know, 50 years old. Like, so like she was really jumping into a race car for the first time later in life, not just, you know, she's been racing her whole life and she's still doing it late. You know, and she talks a lot about that, where it's like she wants to be a motivation for women and people like who might be later in life feeling like it's too late for me to try something new and to take a jump, but it, you know, can still have a very big impact you know, on your life, and it's never too late.
Yeah, well, even just hearing you guys talk about the story itself certainly seems appealing, and I guess that's connecting with, at least you guys have entered in some film festivals and been accepted, and I don't know what details we're able to give, I guess, at this point, but that's very cool. I mean, at least the community that looks at a lot of films says, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, so we submitted into about 10 to 12 festivals for this one. We kind of tested a wide variety of like local, regional, and, you know, national festivals, different sizes, just to kind of see where we land. Yeah, there's certain ones that we can't necessarily talk about, but we're very excited about what we have gotten accepted into. One coming up that we can talk about is there's a Cannes Film Festival in Grand Rapids that's coming up. That's more of a local one that we're really excited about. And then we can't say what it is yet, but one of the festivals that we were most excited about, maybe least optimistic about actually getting into, but actually, you know, we're accepted into, we'll be able to announce that next week. So
okay, great.
So if, you know, people want to keep up with it, like, we'll be sharing on our social media and be able to put more out there about, you know, where people can watch it and, you know, how things are going.
So the shift itself, what's the format? I mean, it's real common now to have multi-episodic things where, you know, you're getting three or four episodes or something. Is this kind of a long-form one thing that you watch, or is it a multi-episode thing?
It's just one thing. It's only like 14 minutes, so it's a
great.
Yeah, it's a short documentary, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So 14 minutes, skillfully filmed and edited by the crew at Uncharted Film Co. That are joining us in studio, and it's Jake and Chandler talking about this film shift that they made and now has been accepted into multiple film festivals and events. I think that's pretty cool. Do you guys see that as like just a kind of greater appreciation for or like recognition that makes you feel like you are onto something, or you guys have some skill in what you do? Or do you think that's like just they've been missing us all along and we're finally glad to be accepted? Or how do you guys look at something like this as an accomplishment?
It's a huge accomplishment, yeah, for us. We've worked on it for like 3 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it's been a real, like, real exciting thing to see, like, the fruits of the labor, for sure. And, yeah, we're just really excited to see what it does, especially for, you know, just, like, people who, like, have this dream and want to achieve it. And, yeah, I think it's just really cool.
Yeah. Now, I reading through some of your materials, races at Sonoma Raceway. NASCAR fans will recognize these tracks: Sonoma Raceway, Homestead, Miami Speedway, Circuit of the Americas in Texas, Road Atlanta in Georgia, and Road America in Wisconsin, among others. Now, you guys are traveling to these locations to see this racing in person?
Yeah. So we had a very, you know, interesting entry into motorsports about 5 or 6 years ago. So we've been filming motorsports for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just got back from Road Atlanta last week, so we're still doing it.
Yeah.
We just happened to connect with Lisa while we were shooting for other clients, and, you know, started talking to her, started learning more about her story. And then at the beginning of, you know, the race, the next season after we really got to know her, is when we connected with her, did a lot of work for her, and then talked about, like, hey, we think you have a really unique story. What do you think about the idea of doing a documentary? So, but yeah, we're still doing a lot of motorsports. We're traveling all over the country. We typically go to the same, you know, we the ones that we've been to. We've probably been to a dozen different racetracks by now, but they go to a lot of the same ones.
Yeah,
you know? But yeah, really exciting.
So I gotta. With the travel and you know, just day-to-day expenses on something like that, that's financed through just your other business dealings with Uncharted, or is there outside financing for something like that?
Yeah, the dream is to, you know, come up with the pitch, the proposal and everything, and have, you know, investment into these types of projects. Luckily for this one specifically, we were able to tie it to other client work. So we had some funding. We were going to these races to do work for our clients, but, you know, there was a lot of crossover with timing. You know, we would send, where some races we might just send one of us, we were trying to send more people, like, so both of us might go and make sure we have coverage on our clients and on Lisa. So we were in a really good spot, and that's part of the reason why we, you know, wanted to pursue this specific idea, because there were, you know, we thought it was a great story, but there were a lot of things logistically that made it very possible.
Yeah, and sometimes that stuff has to fall in line for you to follow through with one of those projects.
Right.
So that's great that it worked out for you guys. So what's next for Shift, your guys' documentary?
Yeah, we so the film festival, like, typically, at least, you know, the way that we're doing it, it does take about, like, a year of submission. So we submitted for festivals throughout the year. So that will, you know, we'll continue to get responses and, you know, hear how things are going for the next 6 or 7 months. And, you know, hopefully it will continue to premiere at different festivals. We're hoping in the next couple months that we can schedule a premiere here in Jackson, you know, just probably nothing too big, but if people want to come check it out, like we said, it's a short doc. So, you know, if people want to come see what we're doing, and then next for us in terms of, like, these passion projects, yeah, we're also in the works on another short film that, you know, we're in pre-production right now. We'll be shooting in, you know, September, yeah, and then hopefully doing another festival circuit next year.
Okay. Mostly documentary stuff, or do you guys delve into, like, drama at all, or scripted?
Yeah, the last short film we did was a scripted one.
Okay.
And then also this one coming up in September is also a scripted one as well.
Oh, great.
So we like to bounce around and do different creative things, but we love documentary. We love, you know, scripted stuff. So, yeah, so we're open to do a lot of, you know, both. So
yeah.
And I will say, we, like, the documentaries is definitely, like, logistically a bit easier, especially if it's, like, something local.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we are trying to put the challenge on ourselves this year to do a one-day doc at some point. So, you know, we're looking for very, like, interesting and unique stories all the time. So, like, that, hopefully that's something that we do more of. But we're trying to get a mix of documentary and narrative.
Okay. Well, so being in these film festivals, film cons, whatever, however it works out, that obviously raises the profile of Uncharted Films Co. Does that start to maybe open doors for you into different avenues where maybe the business changes more, or does it open up doors where you just have more access to doing what you're already doing just for more clients?
Hopefully both, you know, and it definitely can be both. You know, the hope is that you go to these festivals, and there are people who, especially these larger festivals, who will go looking for films. Like, they're producers, they're looking for distribution, they're looking for crews. So we try to go to as many of these events as possible to continue to build, like, that network. And we would love to, you know, continue to, you know, do more documentaries, especially, you know, like, branded documentaries where we're working with a client and kind of combining the two.
Mm-hmm.
But able to tell, like, a really unique and powerful story. But it, you know, it does definitely, like, when you, you know, if you have the opportunity to win awards or, you know, kind of add this, like, credibility to mm-hmm. your name, like, it definitely has, like, helped us, you know, on, like, the business side of things as well, just to have a little bit more, like, legitimacy and just, you know, we can say that we feel like we're pretty good at what we do. But, you know, if you can get somebody else to do it, or you can get some kind of award for it, then, I mean, it definitely helps.
Yeah. So Uncharted Film Co. Started with one person. How many people do you employ these days?
So now there's four of us full time, and then we work with a handful of freelancers just throughout between editing and
contract
shooting
stuff.
Every now and then. Yeah.
Well, great. Continuing to grow, and I wish you lots of future success.
Thank you.
How can people, number one, see other stuff that you've done, and number two, keep track of what you're doing in the future?
Yeah, I would say follow us on Instagram would be, like, where we're most consistent. We're Uncharted Film Co. there. Yeah, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We're putting a lot more out on YouTube now. You can check out our first short film there. It's all at Uncharted Film Co. But yeah, that would be probably the best way to keep up with us.
Sounds great.
UnchartedFilmCo.com is our website.
Sounds great. Best of luck on all of the festivals and any awards you can grab there. And certainly keep us posted on what happens with a screening or debut of that film here in Jackson.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Uncharted Film Co. with Jake and Chandler in studio this morning. Joining me via telephone right now for his weekly appearance, Tom Knutson with the Outdoor Report. Tom, thanks so much for hanging on, and we're glad to have you on board again here on a beautiful Friday.
Good morning, Steve. How are we doing today? Yes, it is a beautiful day out.
Yeah, hard to not be in good spirits when you got that kind of weather forecast to look forward to today and pretty much most of tomorrow.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be a decent, good few days here, and maybe a little few showers here and there on Sunday, but nothing that should ruin a day or a weekend. So get out there for Father's Day.
Do you guys see, like, an increase in just kind of Father's Day business activity in the store, people getting up, getting some bait to plan a fishing trip, or is that all kind of planned ahead?
Oh, no, I have regulars that that I can count on that will be every Sunday, Father's Day Sunday, that they'll be There's one family, two sisters and a dad. They've been coming in for as long as I can remember, and they come in to buy their dad his annual fishing license, and then they buy theirs and they go out fishing that day. That's one day a year that they for sure go fishing. So that's always great to see when I go in every year on that day and still help those people do what they love to do. And yes, we get a lot of activity from Father's Day. A lot of gift certificates go out the door.
Sure.
For dads.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't think of a better spot to get a gift certificate for dad if it's fishing or hunting or camping or boating or there's clothing and just all kinds of. You open a door in there and it you feel like you're in a Willy Wonka's chocolate factory running around.
yeah, and it just keeps getting fuller and fuller.
No doubt about it. And I know you guys are always kind of rotating stock to make sure you're featuring the right stuff for the right season. What's hot right now?
Well, I mean, right now is boating supplies. You know, mm-hmm. Anything, you know, lines, hooks, boating, anchors and, that type of stuff, ski tubes and ski ropes, all that stuff is kind of on the hot ticket, getting ready for what's, everybody hopes to be is a big 4th of July weekend, 2 weeks. It's probably going to be a 2 week run, I would say. The week before, people will probably take some time off and probably some people will be taking their time off the week after. So being it falls on a Saturday this year.
Yeah, it just seems like it's lining up very well for the 250 celebration for the USA, and that bodes well for recreation, certainly. I know a lot of my plans around Independence Day celebration revolve around being at the lake.
Yep, I think a lot of people are going to be at the lakes, and let's hope the weather cooperates and gives us exactly what we want. For the big 250.
Yeah, and you can see some kind of preliminary weather looks at what's going to happen. It does look like it'll be a little bit warmer. I mean, we've settled into just a beautiful, like, mild temperature for the next 7 days or so. Whether or not rain interrupts, we'll see. But, that mid to upper 70s is just great this time of year.
It's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect weather. Perfect for fishing, perfect for doing a lot of things. Not as perfect for a lot of swimming activities, but still not too bad. You know, if you can stomach some of that little cooler weather, but man, I can tell you one thing it's good for is I don't know if anybody's noticed, but those crops are screaming. They love it. They love this temperature and love the moisture we just had. So
yeah, everything seems real green to me.
Fast.
Yeah, everything seems real green to me and thick and lush as far as vegetation goes. So crops are certainly loving it.
Yep. Well, this is you're almost a week too late. If you were to sit and say that, a week ago, say Michigan, this is the time to stop, take a breath, look around you, and notice how green everything is. The marshes, the cattails, and stuff. Now, the new growth has taken over the old growth. Very little brown anywhere. That was last week.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're already seeing brown start around this week when you look at the wheat fields. The wheat fields are starting to turn if you pay attention. And I noticed a lot of them yesterday when I was doing deliveries. And, here comes the brown already. Right on time with the longest day of the year.
Yeah, we get bogged down in a little bit of weather and maybe temperatures a lot, but that kind of... there's some of those hallmarks of the growth season that just kind of hit and you don't even necessarily realize that it's happening. I mean, we have summer solstice coming up this week and we're going to, the longest day of the year, and we're already on the downslope back to short days. I don't want to think about it because we're just turning into summer, but.
Yeah, that's always, we always say it, we're ripped off on that end of it. We take, it's always on the cold side getting to it, and then, we do get the back end of it where it stays fairly warm, even into those first few weeks of fall. But
yeah,
it always feels like we're cheated, down south, they get the whole shebang, but they don't get as much light as we get, so we'll take it. It is what it is. It is nature, and there's really not much we can do about it.
Yeah, and I think we all feel pretty pretty good about the fact that we do get to experience fully four separate seasons of the year, and they all have something good about them.
Absolutely. In my world, they do, for sure.
Yeah. Well, as far as hunting goes, now's kind of like downtime, right? I don't know that there's any hunting seasons. Although, can you pretty much hunt coyote anytime?
Yeah, coyote is now 24/7, back to 24/7, 365. So, yeah, and yeah, as far as hunting, we're kind of quiet, except for the fact that people are working on their food plots, and mm-hmm. those who have the ability to do so are out there cultivating those and prepping those for planting. So yeah, I mean it's for the big time deer hunters, it's never over.
It's an all year round planning and plotting out where you're going to be
it
and
is.
What you're going
to
do.
It is. They work at it, and you know, everybody's looking. I seen a couple bucks with this week running in front of me. I think I actually had quite a few deer run in front of me this week, and
yeah.
You know, seen some babies are starting to show up. You know, a little more, and a lot of fawns. I hate to see the little ones that don't make it across the roads, but definitely looks like our herd's in fairly good shape.
Yeah, I saw at least a half a dozen on my way into the station early morning hours today, so they're out there for sure.
They are.
Well, and I was actually today. I it caught my attention. I couldn't really see, but it's years ago now, obviously. But Jamie McKibben had planted some sorghum out here in front of our building, and you still have some remnants of that, a few stalks growing up, and I didn't see if I saw any this year yet, but I'm going to check that out now that the light of day is on us and see if there's any that's still kind of lingering over there.
Deer like that. It's nice and sweet.
Yeah, that's what Jamie said, and I always trusted his, I deferred to his thoughts on deer hunting because he usually was pretty right.
Absolutely.
All right, Tom, well, what are the hours over at Knutson's?
We're here 8 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 8 to 5 on Sunday.
Always available over there at Knutson's Sporting Goods. Knutson'sSportingGoods.com. And you're over there on Wampler's Lake Road in Brooklyn.
Absolutely. We're here every day.
All right, Tom, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
All right.
You as well.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Knutson, Knutson's Outdoor Report. We'll say welcome to Congressman Tim Walberg. Thank you for calling, Tim.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Congressman, good to have you on this beautiful weather Friday. I never know if you're here in lower Michigan or if you're somewhere over there in Washington, D.C.
Well, today I happen to be in beautiful Lenawee County right now. I'll be heading over to Monroe County soon. We're going to spend most of the rest of the day on and around Lake Erie, sitting on the Natural Resources Committee, as well as chairing the Education Workforce Committee. Sometimes we get a chance to look at the greatness of our natural resources, and Michigan is second to none in the nation. I was just in Salt Lake City the other day with meetings with education institutions, but we got in conversation over lunch hour about the beauty of Michigan and all of the water resources that we have, it's second to none. And the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is something that I've worked on with my colleagues from the Great Lakes Caucus, and work with this president to make sure that the dollars were there to continue making sure things like, and today we'll be looking at the algae situation, making sure it doesn't bloom like it has in the past. We talk about agriculture and the runoff, and Michigan has a wonderful program, the MEAT program, which encourages our agricultural industry to do things like filter strips and lessening some of the use of the herbicides and fertilizers to make sure it doesn't get into our Great Lakes natural waters that are there. And so, no, I'm back in Michigan, looking forward to a great day of seeing that greatness.
Well, yeah, that's excellent. If you're headed over to Lake Erie, and I know, you know, that's a little ways away from Jackson County, but I know it's a popular stop for fishermen from Jackson to head over there, especially early in the fishing season, to fish those waters over there at Lake Erie. So there's certainly people here who are concerned with environmental factors there on Lake Erie.
Yeah, I mean, Lake Erie is the number one, as far as fishery in, if not the world, certainly in the United States. It has more unique varieties of fish than any other body of water. The walleye and the perch are of renown in Lake Erie, and we've had several years already of a record population of walleye and perch. The boat captains out of their recreational fishing captains tell me that there's probably at least five more years as they see what's developed of a record opportunity for catching walleye, and we're talking about significant walleye and perch. I've been working on the cormorant issue, and we think we have a bill that is going to move very shortly out of the natural resources into the floor of the House that enables us to do some more management of the wild cormorant population on all lakes in the country and water bodies. But especially we've seen the impact, the very negative impact, the tonnage, literally tonnage of fish that these cormorants, they look like ducks, but they aren't. And what they eat is causing some real problems. So we don't want to put them into extinction. They are protected right now, and they've become overpopulated. So that's something we look at also. So a lot of stuff that we're blessed with in Michigan, but that also means we have to be good stewards of our resources.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people who follow politics, if you will, government, often you hear the news story of the day, whatever's the focus of the media, and kind of forget that these representatives to Congress are representing an area, so they have to be back here and understanding a number of different issues beyond just whatever the mainstream media is focused on, or whatever, you know, whether it's global politics or even just local. You guys asked to understand a lot.
Well, it's a neat experience. It's like being in grad school every day of your life, potentially. there's so much out there, and you try to become an expert, a specialist in some key areas as a legislator. Mine certainly is in the area of education and workforce, and chairing that committee is extremely important to me and an honor to have that chairmanship. But there are all sorts of other things that relate to people's lives in a district, to whether it's the price of gas at the pump, diesel fuel for our agricultural industry right now, the farmers who've been in the fields planting, and it right now it looks like they've had a decent planting season in our area. But that can all change. So you're looking at issues of water and irrigation and fertilizers, which have been impacted. Hopefully this year, farmers said, purchased for their production last year the fertilizer, because this year with what went on in the Straits of Hormuz, disabling some of that, the product that is used in producing fertilizers, it could cause a real problem next year. So we hope that world situation is handled soon. We've had some good results this week of the memorandum of understanding between Iran and the United States, with Straits of Hormuz basically opened again. Wall Street has taken it as a real plus. We've seen that, and also the price of a barrel of oil has gone down significantly. And we've seen, even yesterday when I filled up over in Brooklyn, Michigan, I filled up for a significantly less price than I have in the last several weeks. So those are good things, and we have to keep moving the right direction, and looking forward to getting back next week and dealing with things like apprenticeship programs, as well as pushing forward some of the issues relative to energy and the fuel industry.
Well, I'll ask you about that memorandum of understanding that you brought up, Congressman. Kind of touted, at least initially, as at least a step along the way to ending conflict with Iran and kind of reintroducing stability to the Middle East, and maybe in a way long-term that we haven't experienced in the past, but at least in the ABC News updates and some media stuff, trying to frame it as a little more chaotic and kind of a win for Iran under an understanding. What's your characterization of that memorandum of understanding as you see it?
Anyone who has actually read the Memorandum of Understanding, which I have, would not characterize it as that unless you are in a full-blown Trump derangement syndrome state. And that, sadly, is the case with CNN and other national news stations. They do not want to give a win, and they don't recognize that when you're dealing with a nation like Iran that has been a bad actor, a dictatorship of a religious sort with the Ayatollah for 47 years, him being taken out on the first day of the conflict, along with 40 other leaders, it's difficult to know for certain who you're negotiating with that will have ultimately the power to settle the deal. And I think that's why the president has taken an approach that takes a win ever so often and moves forward on that, establishes a very clear line of demarcation that if you don't live up to this, then we go back and we hit you harder, which he has done. And right now, I think he's expressed a great belief that we are on the right track, and that's why the strait has been open for the most part, which is a help. Israel still has to defend itself, and that will be the added challenge, because they are not going to let Hezbollah redevelop itself with what they've done to it in recent days at the expense of security in Israel. President Trump and Bibi Netanyahu, I think, are friends, but they are very open with their agreements and disagreements. And so that's an added twist in that region. But when you see what's taken place with the Abraham Accords nations and now other nations moving in that same direction of being at peace with Israel and now having been attacked by Iran just because they stood with Israel, I think it bears great opportunity for that region of the world to be safer, more secure than it's been maybe in history. And Republican and Democrat presidents failed to do what was necessary in the past with Iran. And for that reason, we've had that problem with thousands of Americans, including soldiers, Marines, airmen, being killed by Iran over these 47 years and even up to the present. So it's going to be messy, but if anyone thinks it's going to be one and done, then they're going to miss out on what really is taking place. But that memorandum of understanding makes it clear that they're not going to be a nuclear nation. We are going to be the ones that will be responsible for making sure all of that nuclear material that's under the mountain that we bombed out almost of existence will be cared for and eliminated, and the Straits of Hormuz will be left open, controlled by no one, and especially Iran. And Iran will not be supporting its proxy actors like Hezbollah and the Houthis and others. And I think that's a good deal developing, but it'll take time.
All right. Congressman, is there anything specifically that you wanted to touch on that we haven't been through yet?
Well, I think it's important to note that we ultimately, before we ended session last week, got the Senate to approve the bill that provides funding for Customs and Border and ICE. Mm-hmm. The one thing we're still missing in securing our country, and I think it came to a head with the threat that was found out because a mother saw something, said something about her son's involvement with potentially what was going to be a terrorist act, led by what we're finding out now, an illegal criminal alien on the UFC fight at the White House last mm-hmm. week, which would have been a tragic blow and produce ultimate fear within the United States. But that was stopped. And so there's one thing remaining that we need to get past really soon, because over that weekend, FISA 702 was out of operation. And that's for clear surveillance on foreign bad actors, not domestic, but foreign actors. And Chuck Schumer and the Democrats shut that down. The House has passed it already, keeping that 702 in place. So our intelligence gathering agencies can continue to protect us from another 9/11. Chuck Schumer and Democrats have to ultimately say, do you support the freedom and opportunity and security of United States citizens, or do you support the opportunity for terrorists to impact our nation like 9/11? And so hopefully next week when we all get back in session, that will be one of the first things that we're able to get across the line and put that in operation again and not have it dark and with the potential of pending doom because the Democrats refuse to give something to the president that he needs and he wants in operation. So I guess that's the only thing I'd say. And if any of your listeners would like to call our senators and tell them to support America's security, pass FISA 702, that would be a help, and it'd be important for the United States security.
All right, Congressman, thank you for your time here on your Friday. Have a great weekend, and happy Father's Day.
You as well. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Congressman Tim Walberg.